Okay, the next argued case this morning is number 21-2244. Plastic Packaging Incorporated against Premium Waters Incorporated. Mr. Dillon, when you're ready.
Good morning.
Okay. Mr. Dillon, proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. This case is before the court on a grant of summary judgment of invalidity for 12 patents. Those 12 patents are presumed to have correctly named the inventors named on the patents, Mr. Morgan and Mr. Darr. To overcome that presumption, the challenger needs to come forward with clear and convincing evidence that the inventorship is incorrect, and on summary judgment, that evidence needs to be undisputed. Here, the evidence regarding the co-inventorship defense was greatly disputed, and I'd like to focus on two aspects of that. The first is with regards to the independent evidence that was submitted by Plastipak that the inventors independently created these inventions without any input from Mr. Falzone. That evidence includes the depositions of Mr. Darr and Mr. Morgan, where they identified themselves as the ones who conceived of these inventions in March and April of 2006. That evidence also includes their inventor notes that describe the invention and talk about how they came up with neck finishes as small as 0.25 inches, how they went through and designed an engineering drawing of 0.436 inches, and how that 0.580 number came from a measurement that Mr. Morgan made related to the consumer acceptability. That is substantial evidence that if a jury were to credit, as it should, and as the court was required to on summary judgment, would be a reasonable basis for the jury to conclude that inventorship was correct, that Mr. Falzone was not a co-inventor, and that Premium Waters had not met its burden to establish with clear and convincing evidence that the inventorship on these patents was correct. The second category of evidence relates to their challenge. They allege that Mr. Falzone, 9 months before the conception of these inventions, provided a 3D file to Mr. Darr, and that 3D file contained what they characterize as two inventions of Mr. Falzone. One of the inventions was alleged to be a discontinuous tamper evident formation. The other was a neck finish with a height of 0.580 inches. Their allegation was that Mr. Darr stole those inventions from Mr. Falzone and used them 9 months later in the work that he did with Mr. Morgan to come up with the inventions that are claimed in these 12 patents. The facts related to those two alleged inventions by Mr. Falzone were heavily disputed in the summary judgment record.
Let me ask you, right from the first page of the red brief, Premium Water says, all 12 asserted patents depict one of Darr's drawings of Falzone's design, the ML27 design, and refer to the drawing as an embodiment of the invention. Isn't that true, and isn't that enough to be clear and convincing evidence that Mr. Falzone should have been listed as an inventor?
Figure 6 is in each of the 12 patents, Your Honor. Figure 6 is Mr. Darr's drawing that was based on work he did with Mr. Falzone of an ML27 figure. It is not what is claimed in the patents.
The patents describe it as an embodiment of the invention of all 12 patents.
Figure 6 is listed as an embodiment of the invention, but it is not a claimed embodiment in any of these patents. And what matters is the claims. What is included in, therefore, if you look at the description of Figure 6, is that it is a depiction of the vented threading of a carbonated soft drink finish. That's what's referred to, is to show that the inventions that were invented by Mr. Darr and Mr. Morgan, they also viewed that it could work with a very well-known vented threading. They put as an illustration of that a drawing that Mr. Darr did himself. And although that drawing was done as part of the ML27 project, that drawing itself is not a claimed embodiment.
Why is it not? You keep saying that it's not an claimed embodiment. I want to hear why not.
Because the claims in every one of these patents are directed to the dimensions of the neck finish. And Figure 6 does not have any dimensions. We know from the origin of figure 6 that it is a figure that is 0.631 or 0.641
according
inches.
According to Mr. Dar, when Mr. Dar received the drawing from Mr. Falzoni, he made an embodiment, and it was 0.6. What did you say?
He made three drawings, Your Honor. The first one was 0.591, which is taller than any claimed embodiment.
Okay.
He then had to increase it because it didn't work. First to 0.631 and then to 0.641 inches. There was never a single embodiment of the ML27 finish worked on by Mr. Dar and Mr. Falzoni that ever practiced any of the claims in any of these 12 patents.
So your view is that that at least raises a genuine issue of material?
Yes, Your Honor.
What about our case law that says that a person, to be an inventor, has to make a significant contribution, but it could be a building block that results in a claim limitation? It doesn't have to be a claim limitation itself. In other words, why isn't what Mr. Falzoni provided a building block, even if it doesn't necessarily have a measurement that falls within the claim limitation?
For two reasons. One is because that was a separate project and we know what occurred in that project. The testimony is that that project only got taller. So it wasn't a building block to getting a smaller neck finish. It started with a neck finish that was taller than any claimed embodiment in any of the 12 patents, and it continued to increase because it didn't work. And when they finished the project, it was at 0.641, well above the claim. So it was not a building block, at least as a dispute of fact. And the second thing is, the evidence from the independent invention story by Dar and Morgan is that the way they came up with their invention was through a completely different approach and a different drawing. It's the drawing that's depicted in figures 1 through 5. It's a much smaller drawing, and it's not based on the ML27 neck finish. That is a 0.436-inch drawing. That's what the patents were directed to. And so, although it's possible that somebody could contribute towards something that's a building block to eventually get to the invention, that didn't occur here. That's not what Dar and Morgan testified. They said they came up with this on their own. And that testimony on summary judgment has to be credited. It's possible a jury might disagree with them, but on summary judgment, Dar and Morgan said, we worked on this alone. This is our invention. And for summary judgment purposes, that should be sufficient.
My question may be essentially the same as Judge Stoll's, but the district court said at A28, there's no doubt that the image, I think it's the 3D image, contributed significantly to the conception of a complete neck finish. The district court clearly said that. Isn't that enough to constitute clear and convincing evidence of inventorship?
That's the court's... What the court found there was its acceptance of the Premia Waters evidence, but that doesn't take into consideration the evidence that Plastipak put into the record that refuted that. The court said it led to the conception of a complete neck finish. We don't dispute that. The complete neck finish was the 0.591 neck finish, the ML27 neck finish, that Mr. Dar made in June of 2005 working with Mr. Falzoni. That was a complete neck finish, but not one that practices any of these claims. And that's the issue, is that the ML27 was undoubtedly a separate project. There was collaboration between SACMI and Plastipak related to that particular neck finish. But that neck finish never resulted in anything that practiced even one of the asserted claims. There's a separate project, and if our evidence is believed, which it must be on summary judgment, Dar and Morgan came up with a separate neck finish, and that neck finish is the one that led to the claims that are in each of the 12 patents.
What about the other claims, the claims that have a neck finish height of 0.5 or less, and the allegation that what Mr. Falzoni contributed was a discontinuous TEF?
Your Honor, two aspects of that. One is, their allegation in their brief, their summary judgment brief, was that Mr. Falzoni was the inventor of the discontinuous tamper evident formation. And that just proved, the record proved that that wasn't so. We put in patents from 50 years ago showing that the discontinuous tamper evident formation was well known in the record. We also put in the examiner's record showing that it was found in the prior art. And we put in a patent from Mr. Dar from 7 years before this collaboration showing that Mr. Dar also knew about DTEFs because it had it in his own patent. So this wasn't something he learned from Mr. Falzoni. Moreover, Mr. Falzoni at his deposition admitted that he did not contribute to claims of 0.50 or to 2.3 grams. So the claims, for example, if you looked at the 299 patent, the independent claim is a neck finish with a 0.50 neck finish weighing 2.3 grams. Mr. Falzoni has said he didn't provide any information on that. The only allegation is, with regards to the 299 patent, is in dependent claim 6, it claims the neck finish of claim 1, wherein the tamper evident formation is discontinuous. That's the only basis for their motion, is this discontinuous tamper evident formation for the 299 patent and four others that we note in our brief. And our issue here is that that wasn't a novel contribution, and this court's case law is very clear that with regards to an inventor cannot be an inventor by contributing the state of the art or what's known in the prior art. And here, where DTaFs were known for 50 years and Mr. Darr knew about it, that could not be a contribution to make him an inventor with regards to those five patents. The claims control. And here the district court didn't look at the individual claims of these 12 patents to see what elements in there were contributed by Mr. Falzoni, even if we credited their testimony. With regards to the DTaF was not a novel invention, and with regards to those claims that were directed to the 0.580x dimension, those were highly disputed. And the record on that is that we had submitted an expert testimony showing that there was no X dimension of 0.580. And more critically, we submitted the drawing that Mr. Darr made on the same day he received that file. He didn't understand that to be a 0.580 or less neck finish because he created that same day a neck finish that was taller, 0.591, than any claimed embodiment. And never in any of the work that he did with Mr. Falzoni did he ever result in a neck finish that satisfied any of these claims. I see I'm well into my rebuttal time. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, I will look forward to responding to the comments.
To be sure I understand, is it clear that Mr. Falzoni had his own patent or patent application on the specific structure that he disclosed?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Falzoni filed his own patent claims related to the unique closure and the neck interlocking structure. And he has never made a claim to be an inventor of any of the Plastipak patents.
Okay. Any more questions for counsel at the moment?
No.
No.
All right. Let's hear from the other side. Mr. Kostakos.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. Although inventorship can be a highly factual inquiry, the material facts here are not in dispute. There's no dispute that Mr. Falzoni sent the 3D model to Mr. Darr. There's no dispute that the email that went along with that 3D model, the June 13th email, said the model was of a neck finish. The email said it had a neck support ring, which everyone agrees is the same thing.
Do you agree, though, that there is a dispute about the neck finish height of that file? I mean, there's evidence, of course, that that Mr. Falzoni, during the litigation, measured it and got something below 0.58. But there's also evidence that at the time that the file was exchanged, Mr. Darr implemented it, and it was more than 0.58. So isn't that enough, at least, to create a genuine issue of material fact?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because what happened was Mr. Falzoni sent a model which had a lower point for the neck support ring. And he specifically said the point below the neck support ring is left undefined. And at his—
There is no neck support ring.
Well, there's the top surface and there's a side surface and there's a point where that changes.
He estimated where he thought it would be. But well, you agree, though, that there wasn't a neck support finish, right?
Well, I mean, it has two of the three surfaces that a neck support ring would have. And the email specifically said there's a neck support ring. And he measured it during his deposition.
During his deposition he agreed that there wasn't a neck support ring.
No, I don't think so. I think he said there was one. He said there was no lower surface of a neck support ring. And there's no dispute about that. We don't say there's a lower surface.
He agreed on cross-examination that there was no lower point to the neck support, correct?
Well, he said that his interpretation was it was where he measured it, the point 14.304. That's where he said he thought the lower point of it was. He said A normal neck support ring is about a millimeter in thickness, and Mr. Brandow, their expert, said the very same thing in his expert report at...
But there's dispute about what where the bottom of that would have been and what the X measurement would be. On what basis could we agree that any reasonable juror would have to find that the measurement that Mr. Falzone did in his deposition is the only measurement possible here?
Well, I think what he said was 14.304 is my interpretation. It could be slightly larger, but even accounting for it being larger, he said, it would still be under 0.58 because he said it could be 14.6 millimeters or 14.7 millimeters, both of which are under 0.58. I think the fact that Mr. Darr later increased the size does not diminish the fact that Mr. Falzone sent a model that had a lower a neck support ring that was lower than 0.58. So the fact that Mr. Darr had one, which was that he said for his particular process, and Mr. Falzone said sometimes you need to make it thicker because of the process that you're using to blow mold these things. And so Mr. Darr made one that was larger. But that doesn't diminish, I don't think, the disclosure that Mr. Falzone made to Mr. Darr.
Well, but you don't have to think that. But why doesn't this go to a jury to weigh all the evidence and decide what they think?
Well, because it's not as though someone submitted some disputed evidence that's saying, I interpret this 3D model differently than you do. There is no testimony from Mr. Darr. All we have is a drawing that somebody did. We don't even really know if it was Mr. Darr. It was sent by Mr. Darr. Presumably somebody at Plastipak did a drawing.
On essentially the same day that they received the 3D model.
On essentially the same day. But I don't think Mr. Darr's or whoever's drawing could be interpreted to say, this is my interpretation of your 3D model. It was his changing of the neck support ring that was disclosed in the 3D model. So I just don't think it diminishes the disclosure that Mr. Falzone made to Mr. Darr in that 3D model. They never put in any evidence whatsoever from Mr. Darr after the SACME evidence came out. They never put in a declaration saying, I didn't take anything from SACME. They didn't put a deposition in saying, I didn't take anything.
What about the evidence of independent invention? That's in the record, isn't it?
Well, there is testimony from Mr. Darr before the SACME evidence came out.
It's in the record, right?
It is in the record. There he said nobody had ever tried to make one smaller than what was then the prevailing size, which was 0.67, and I didn't know of anybody doing it in Europe. Well, it turns out it's undisputed now that that testimony is not true, right?
Go ahead. Sorry.
I mean, it's not true that nobody was doing it.
But it's not undisputed. The credibility of everything Mr. Darr said prior to you developing the SACME evidence, that is in dispute. You may say certain points of it are not in dispute, but they're not conceding that all of it was wrong, are they?
Not everything that Mr. Darr said before SACME came to light is wrong, surely. But his whole story about how he came up with this in January of 2006 without having known about anyone ever trying to make anything smaller, that is clearly wrong, because we know from the record that he and SACME were working on this project starting in June of 2005, going all the way through March of 2006, during the supposed time when they were coming up with their invention, was when the time when they were trying to work out an exclusive deal for the ML-27.
Do you agree that in this posture, the district court was required to draw all reasonable inferences in favor of Plastipak?
Of course, yeah, that's what the case law says. I don't disagree with that.
Can you identify even a single inference that the judge drew in favor of Plastipak?
Well, I think what the court said, the court's conclusion, I think, was that Plastipak did not submit any evidence in response to the SACME allegations. So they didn't put anything in disputing the interpretation of the 3D model, nothing from their inventor, nothing from their expert. All they have is this drawing from Dick Darr, which is not, I don't think, an interpretation of the 3D model. It's just his own version of a neck support ring. There's no one who came in and said, you know, I look at this 3D model and I interpret it differently. That evidence is not in the record. It's completely one-sided. It's all on our side and Mr. Falzone's testimony about what the 3D model discloses. There's no competing interpretation of that. So I don't think that there was an inference that the district court didn't draw. I think he was looking at the evidence that Plastipak submitted, which was basically, they say it's all disputed, but all they really did is say, we dispute it.
What about the testimony where, again, going back to this, is the Falzoni deposition testimony where he says, we cannot say that there was an unmistakable, that was mistakably service height.
Sorry to get that last word.
The quote where he says, we cannot say that there was the unmistakably surface height. And when response to the questions about where the neck finish would end.
Well, yeah, what he said was, my interpretation, my measurement is 14.304, but if it has a slightly larger radius, it could be 14.6 or 14.7. That's what he said. All of which would be under 0.58. There was no dispute about that whatsoever. No one put in anything saying, I interpret this model differently. So all we have is Falzoni's testimony, all of which says it's under 0.58. We also have I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I was just clearing my throat. I didn't want to interrupt your sentence, but now that I have interrupted, let me ask you a hypothetical. Let's say that Dar is just thumbing through the prior art and he comes upon Falzoni's patent or patent application, which discloses and describes the particular structure. And so Dar thinks, oh, that's very interesting. That fits in with my larger design. And as one of his three components, he uses what he found in the prior art. Would that make the author of that prior art reference a joint inventor?
Now, I think the case law is pretty clear there needs to be some collaboration between the parties for someone to be a joint inventor. But here we have that, of course.
Well, so let's say that the next step then is that Dar doesn't find this in the prior art. It comes in the mail. Unsolicited, or even because the parties knew each other, have been thinking about collaborating. At what stage, what is the transition between this unsolicited suggestion that is appreciated by Dar, it's useful, and so he uses it as part of his larger invention, which includes other components. Where is the line at which the source of that information, which is, in a sense, prior art? Dar doesn't say that he invented that step. We're not talking about whether Falzoni might have a case for infringement or whatever. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about this multi-component claim that Dar has written, which includes information that came unsolicited from outside, which may or may not have been previously published.
Okay, well, I want to distinguish, Your Honor, between the hypothetical and the real world, because your hypothetical is an unsolicited thing in the mail, right? Never heard of this guy before.
Well, so something he found in the prior, yes.
Right, but that's not what happened here. I mean, here we have evidence that SACME and Plastipak were working together even before the ML27 was sent to them. And, you know, the email, the June 13th email says, Mr. Scutellari asked me to send this to you. And then, not only that, they continued working with each other after that. So there was quite a bit of collaboration. So I don't think we need to, for this particular case, figure out where the dividing line is between unsolicited invention that you use, or looking at something in the prior art. That's not what happened here at all. And you mentioned
this is really quite a difficult question, because nobody says that they were working together in order to develop what Falzoni came up with. Is that right?
Well, Falzoni came up with his ML27 first. That's right. And that's the model that he sent to Mr. Dar, was a model of his neck ML27 neck finish. That's right. And then they continued to work together to try to commercialize that. And then that is what we believe Mr. Dar filed as his patent application. It looks exactly the same.
But he didn't file on the Falzone invention. He filed on a multi-component structure of which one component was what he had received from, let's accept one component was what he received from Falzone.
Well, I'm glad you said...
I think Falzone better of the entire enlarged structure.
Yeah, I'm glad you said multi-component because the 3D model has every component, right? It has the threads, it has the tamper evident formation, a discontinuous tamper evident formation, and it has...
it's not a dispute.
Yeah, well, so...
That's prior art. But those, the discontinuous threads and so on, they're in the prior art. In a sense, what Falzone produced is also prior art in that it came from outside, that these inventors didn't create it. But they used it as they used the prior art, then let's accept that. Does that make the source of prior art a joint inventor?
Well, in this particular instance, it does, because they were working together, so it was joint. I think that the submission that Mr. Falzone made to Mr. Dar had every element of the invention. It also looks exactly like what's in Figure 6, which has the discontinuous beads, and it has the means for showing tamper evidence, which is also in some of the claims. It is identical. What they did, they took the drawing from the 3D model, they put it in their own internal drawings, and the district court pointed out how those internal drawings said ML27 right on them. Then they took those internal drawings, they put them in the patent application, and that's what they claimed.
So
and none of that is in dispute.
Wouldn't that make Dar a joint inventor of the Falzone device, which is two of the three components?
Well, we're not arguing that Dar is a joint inventor of Falzone's invention, but we are arguing...
No, I'm looking at the logical consequence of what we're saying, where people who know each other and we're discussing collaboration and so on, where whatever information you receive, unrestricted, no secrecy, no non-confidentiality, probably already published, is also part of the larger invention. It seems to me that the implications of such a ruling would be extraordinary.
Well,
in terms of people who collaborate in various areas.
Well, here, remember, they were, and I'm going over my time here, but they were working together before the June 13th email on other projects.
They were discussing commercial collaboration. Is that right?
They were working on...
Working together as scientists, as engineers, to improve the product.
Coming up with different designs, exactly. And there was some collaborative activity ahead of time. It wasn't as though this just came out of the blue from Mr. Falzone. And he did say in his email,
but
please keep it...
The record. There was nothing in the record, as I recall, about collaboration in the development of... the technology, just talking about what do we do in the future,
well,
is that right?
Well, there was talk about developing, remember there was another project called the TOTS project, which was like a snap cap that didn't have threads. That was before the ML27. There was some discussion, in the record of the ML27, that there was a discussion of the ML27, but the first time that Plastipak actually saw the ML27 was when Mr. Falzone sent that 3D model that had all the dimensions in it to Mr. Dar.
I have one question.
Yes.
Said several times that the ML27 has every element in the claim.
Yes.
I think that's a bit of an overstatement because it certainly doesn't have the support flange. I just want to make sure you agree with that, right?
I don't agree with that, Your Honor, and here's why. There were two things that were sent at once. There was the email, and there was the 3D model. I agree with you, of course, that the 3D model only has the top surface and the side surface of the support ring. Okay, that's true, and I'm not disputing that.
Mr. Falzone left it up to Mr. Dar to decide where to put the support surface, right?
Well, what he said, and then his email. So his email, I think, is important. The email says it has a neck support ring.
Yep.
And then it says the portion under the neck support ring has been left undefined, so you can change it at your ease.
But there wasn't a support ring shown in the figure, right?
There were the two surfaces, and it has the corner, which is corner 32 is identified in the patent as the corner.
So it's your view that undisputedly there's a support flange in the figure?
Yes.
That was sent.
And what it said was the part under the support ring is left undefined. Remember, what's under the support ring is the tube that is used to form the bottle. So you can change that however you want to make whatever, if you're going to make a 500 milliliter or a 20 ounce or whatever kind of size bottle you want to make. They said you can change the part under the support ring. It has both corners and it has that point. If you look at figure 5 of the patent, there's a point 32, which is identified as the corner where the vertical surface of the support ring turns into the undersurface. And I agree with you.
Your adversary disagrees with you, right? And they've taken the position factually that what you're saying is not true. And I don't understand why that doesn't raise a genuine issue of material fact.
Well, because it's just attorney argument. That's just attorney argument on his behalf. The only evidence in the record is Mr. Falzone's testimony and the 3D model.
Also the figure itself.
And of course, the 3D model. And like I said, we're not saying that it shows a lower support surface, a lower surface of the support flange, but it does have the corner.
Can I just ask that on the discontinuous tamper evident formation?
Yes.
What is your position? Is it that Mr. Falzone is the inventor of it or that it was the prior art?
He was the inventor of it, yes.
So what about these patents from 50 years ago that appear to show a discontinuous TEF?
Yeah, so it's attorney argument, right? They didn't put in any evidence about that and what the context of those patents were. They just threw a bunch of patents in front of the court and said...
Well, the patents are evidence, are they not?
Patents are evidence, but they have to be admissible evidence. How would that have been sufficient to just put patents in front of a jury and say... That's an issue of fact on which sufficient evidence on which a jury could have found.
It wasn't in front of a jury, right?
No, but
a judge to determine whether summary judgment was appropriate.
Yes, but the question is, was it sufficient for a jury to have returned a verdict in their favor? And my point is, I don't think just putting patents in by itself, just like in an obviousness argument, you can't just say put patents in and argue as an attorney.
Isn't it a genuine dispute of fact? I think a material fact as to whether Mr. Falzone is the inventor of a discontinuous TEF.
But it's a discontinuous TEF in the context of the shorter neck ring.
But isn't it a fact dispute?
Well, I don't think... The test isn't whether the discontinuous support ring, or excuse me, tamper-evident formation by itself is new. The question is, did Mr. Falzone make a not insignificant contribution to those claims that include the tamper evidence?
Well, if it's been in the prior art for 50 years, then that would go to at least a weighing of the evidence as to whether it's significant contribution or insignificant contribution, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't think that there was any evidence that this particular type of, in this particular context, was in the prior art.
Wasn't there evidence that Mr. Falzone himself told some group, I didn't invent this, it's nothing novel?
Well, that was hearsay, right? There's some hearsay documents that they put in.
Was there an admissibility determination already?
No, they didn't. There was no determination by the district court on that point.
Okay. But it is at least in the record, whether admissible or not.
Yes,
that
it is.
Said something to that.
Yes,
record.
Of course, I agree with that. And you know the document, they're a little bit mysterious because right before that he says we filed our own patent application, so it's you can't use it. But then he says something the statement that you're quoting. So that is in the record. We don't think it's admissible because it's hearsay, as we pointed out. They didn't ask any questions about it. So, I mean, the point is that the discontinuous tamper-evident formation is something that was disclosed as part of the 3D model. The identical formation is something that they put in their patent. Right? That figure 6 looks exactly like the 3D model.
Is there a dispute now as to whether the figure 6 embodiment is within the scope of any of these claims?
I don't think so. I think that there's no... I can't think of any possible basis on which claim 6 would not... figure 6 would not be covered.
Well, the argument seems to be figure 6 doesn't expressly show any dimensions.
None of the figures show dimensions.
So then how do we know if figure 6 is within the scope of the claims, those patents at least that have dimensions for the X dimension?
It's the only figure that has a tamper-evident formation. And tamper-evident formation is, there's no dispute that's claimed. So it is the only embodiment that has that. It says it's an embodiment of the invention. There's nothing, if you look at the specification of the patent, there's nothing to suggest that figure 6 is not covered by the claims. The figures all just show different neck finishes. And then the discussion in the patent, the specification, just talks about dimensions. It doesn't attach them to particular figures. And so there's nothing, there's no basis whatsoever, in my view at least, for finding that figure 6 is not covered by some of the claims. Certainly it's covered, I think, by the discontinuous tamper-evident formation claims. And can I make one final point on discontinuous? I'm sorry, I know I'm way over. And that is, there is the case law on means plus function elements. And the case law, I think, is pretty clear that the inventor of an embodiment that is the subject of a means plus function element is a joint inventor of those claims. And several of the claims call for means for showing tamper evidence or words to that effect. There's no real dispute that the particular embodiment that is shown.
Just to make sure, I don't remember that being something that was discussed by the district court or that was teased out at all for us to consider today.
I don't think it was discussed at that level. He certainly talks about means plus function elements. I mean, he talks about some of the claims being means plus function elements, but he doesn't, I don't think, cite Ethicon and the other cases that stand for that proposition. I agree with you.
Okay.
Nothing further?
Any more questions?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear rebuttal from Mr. Dillon.
I'd like to start by the question of whether there was evidence disputing their interpretation of the 3D file, and I would point the court to the expert report of Mr. Brandau, cited at pages 7752 of the appendix, as well as 7754, where Mr. Brandau, in looking at the file, says the 3D images do not show a neck finish with a support flange and thus do not have any gauge points that would correspond to an X dimension. Again, the X dimension is the one that's measured to the lower surface of the support flange. In addition to his expert report, he was deposed by Mr. Kostakis, and during his deposition at pages 947, he says the IGS, which is a similar file to the 3D file that is before the court, does not have a support flange. It has a top of a support flange. Would you agree with that? That's the question for Mr. Kostakis. The expert says no. Okay, what would you call that structure? It is an undefined structure. He similarly says later in his deposition at page appendix 980, question, and so if we go and look at this drawing that we looked at before, will you agree that the part underneath the support ring has been left undefined? Answer, there is no support ring. Question, and explain what you mean by that. Answer, well, there's no support ring. There is at least a question of fact regarding the interpretation of that 3D file based on our expert's testimony, which was not cited or considered in the court's opinion. I would also point the court to the attention of Mr. Dar's .591 drawing. Although he was not deposed with regards to the SOCMI stuff, and that deposition is not part of this record, his drawing that he made the same day he received the file is. And reasonable inferences can be drawn and must be drawn in summary judgment in favor of Plastipak. It doesn't diminish the disclosure. And the reason here is, for conception, what matters is how Mr. Dar understood the file. What did he learn from looking at that file? It's possible that others would reach Mr. Kostakis' conclusion that it disclosed a neck finish below 0.580. Mr. Falzoni certainly testified that way. But what we know from Dar is the same day he created a neck finish that was 0.591, that's his understanding. And since the question is what was conveyed to Mr. Dar, that is relevant evidence that a jury could use to find that there is not clear and convincing evidence of misjoinder. The last point I would like to turn back to is figures, and I mentioned before figure 6, and I want to point the court to appendix site 140, which is taken from the 299 patent. Two points. First of all, there are tamper-evident formations depicted in other figures, of the patent. You can certainly see one in figure 1 and figure 2 as well. They are not discontinuous. You can see it in figure 3 and also figure 4. So figure 6 is not the only depiction of a tamper-evident formation. And the language on column 4 at lines 4 to 8 on page 140 describes what figure 6 is. It illustrates a perspective view of an upper neck portion of a preform or a container according to another embodiment. As illustrated in the figure, the neck may include threading of the type that is commonly employed in connection with containers for holding carbonated contents. That was the reason for including figure 6 to show the vented threading. The final point I would make with regards to the means plus function, there was no claim construction done with regards to that, so at least that would be a reason for remanding. Please ask the court to recognize the genuine disputes of material fact, to reverse the decision, and remand it for trial. Thank you for your time.
Any more questions for Mr. Dillman?
No, thank you.
No questions.
Okay, thank you. My thanks to both counsel. This case is taken under submission.